You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It is Friday. Thank goodness. Time for our reporter roundtable. This is when we get you up to date on the news that made headlines this week. Our panel today, James Dawson with Boise State Public Radio News, Harrison Berry with the Boise Weekly, Rachel Cohen with Boise State Public Radio News, and Kevin Richard with Idaho Ed News. Welcome, everybody.
Hey, Gemma.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Well, and remember, I know because we all can't see each other, so it makes it a little bit more difficult. But, you know, even if I call someone to answer a question, feel free to add to it if you guys want to. I know it's just a little bit harder with all this technology we're using these days. But with that being said, Kevin, I do want to start with you because, you know, even though you normally focus on education news, you guys are also covering the coronavirus. And you've done quite a bit with the number of cases, done a pretty deep dive on that. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, what we've been trying to do is get some answers about how we all should be reading these case numbers, what we should be looking at, and trying to make some sense of these numbers. Because you're right, I'm an education reporter, but as we try to cover this story and try to make sense of decisions about closing schools, keeping schools closed, potentially reopening schools, it's important to get a sense of what these numbers are saying. And as I talked to the Department of Health and Welfare, a couple of things came out in a story that I did this week. First of all, when you crunch Idaho's numbers and you look at our case numbers per 100,000 residents, they're actually fairly high. They were near the top 10 earlier this week. I don't know where we are exactly right now, Friday afternoon, but we were just outside of the top 10 in terms of cases per 100,000 residents. Still very far away from New York or New Jersey, mm-hmm. or Louisiana, the hot spots that we've been hearing about in the national media, but a fairly high rate relative to other states and a fairly high rate relative to other states in the West. Only Washington had a higher rate per 100,000 residents. And obviously Washington has been wrestling with the coronavirus for a lot longer than Idaho has. The other thing that I wanted to get to is a sense of, well, what does it start to look like if we start to flatten a curve? And what I got a sense of is why health officials look at these doubling rates that we see nationally, mm-hmm. and internationally. How quickly is the spread? How quick is the increase? And if you're seeing a doubling rate of 2 days versus 3 days versus longer, what that means. And where Idaho had been last week was the new confirmed cases were doubling roughly every 3 days. And that's not too far out of line with other states, but still a fairly rapid doubling rate. That doubling rate has slowed considerably this week. We're not getting a lot of test results. That's the flip side of that. But the doubling rate does appear to be slowing somewhat. So, yeah, when you hear Governor Little talking, as he did this week, about, you know, that there are some signs that the curve is flattening, that's what he's talking about. The doubling rate is slowing somewhat.
Right. And Rachel, what about, as Kevin mentioned, the testing, right? And the testing picture, because it's changed quite a bit this week. And can you start off by talking about a study that came out of Blaine County? And we should note, Rachel is located in Twin Falls. So Rachel does a lot of reporting on Blaine County. So you've really gotten to know that area well, Rachel.
Yes, I've been doing a lot of reporting in the past few weeks on Blaine County, but I'm not quite there myself.
Right.
The study that's coming out of Blaine County is interesting for a number of reasons. It was just announced this week, so it hasn't really begun yet. But what it's going to be is a randomized controlled study. What it's going to hopefully tell us is how widespread the virus is in that community. The reason why that's interesting is because we really don't know how many people have this virus, both locally and nationally. And the reason for that is testing. We can't test everyone who wants a test. We can't test everyone who's sick. Then there are a lot of people who don't know they've been sick. So the numbers that Kevin was talking about that are being reported every day here in Idaho, that tells us something, but it doesn't tell us everything. So the study that will happen in Blaine County will include people who are symptomatic, asymptomatic, people who got a test, people who never got a test. And hopefully, because we include all those groups, we'll have a better understanding of just how many people, or, you know, the percentage of people who have had the virus.
Who's doing the who's doing this study, Rachel?
So this is a collaboration between the fire district, actually, in Ketchum, the Albany College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences in New York, and the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center, which is in Seattle. So hopefully next week, Blaine County residents, actually a random sample of 400 Blaine County residents, will have their blood drawn. And the reason why it's they're having their blood drawn is because it's this antibody test that we've been hearing a lot about. Those results will be sent to Seattle and then to Albany. And those two groups are working on slightly different pieces of the puzzle, but will help Blaine County understand its picture itself.
And I'm assuming part of the reason why they focused on Blaine County was that there was one point during this where Blaine County had as they were the second largest number of cases in the country, I mean, per capita behind New York City.
Yes. And at one point, it's actually been higher per capita than New York. That's one of the reasons why I'm sure that these groups are interested in looking at Blaine County. It's a fairly small community. So by testing 400 people, you might actually get a good sense of how widespread the virus is. Whereas if you tested 400 in New York, you might not get as clear picture or results. Another reason why this is happening is just that Blaine County wants answers. They want people to come in. So they kind of invited these groups.
So I want to get back to the antibody testing, Rachel, in a little bit. So we'll talk about that in the next segment. But James, I want to bring you into the conversation as well, because in the midst of coronavirus going on, the state of Idaho, and we have a healthcare exchange, but we're not putting people onto the healthcare exchange. Is that correct?
So, yeah, what happens is basically at the end of every year since the Affordable Care Act was passed and things have gotten up and going, you've had a few weeks every year where you can sign up for health insurance through the exchange. And depending on your income level, you might get a federal health insurance subsidy for that. So 13 states in Washington, D.C., and Idaho is one of them, have full control over these exchanges that sell the health insurance. All of them, except for Idaho, have allowed people to sign up for health coverage right now. And so that would make it much easier for people who lose their jobs or, you know, were laid off, or, you know, maybe they took a look back, say, in December or November and thought, well, you know, I'm pretty healthy. I don't think I need health insurance next year. Those people would be able to sign up right now. But the healthcare exchange, when I talked to them last week, they said that they couldn't unilaterally open up this special enrollment period. And the ball is really in Governor Brad Little's court here. They're the only ones who can make the decision according to the exchange. So there are some options for people if they can't get on the exchange and they don't have health insurance right now. Obviously, there's Medicare and Medicaid if you qualify for those. But there are these short-term plans that Blue Cross of Idaho and Select Health are offering. Their short-term options. They're not considered health insurance under federal law because they have lifetime coverage caps. They don't cover pre-existing conditions for several months. I was told by Blue Cross that COVID-19 will not be considered a pre-existing condition under that plan, so that would be covered. But if you're talking about other chronic conditions, those probably are not.
And then on top of this, we have this mandatory stay-at-home order in place. And we talked about this a bit on the program earlier this week, but this is really a trying time for many people who may be in abusive relationships. And Harrison, in fact, calls to Women's and Children's Alliance have really spiked, haven't they?
They have. Just last month alone, they got a jump of about 24%, according to them. And that puts a tremendous amount of stress on the resources that are already available. Obviously, these are nonprofits. They do what they can. But I think, like a lot of other institutions and organizations in this state, these are organizations that are stressed by the new situation. I think it's kind of important to note, and it's a bit of the crux of the piece this week, that for many of us, staying at home is a way to stay safe, right? That's shelter in place. But for people in potentially abusive situations, that situation is considerably more complicated.
Right. And we should note, when we had the WCA on earlier this week, that for any of you who are listening and you may be in a situation or you know someone who is, that you need to get be safe and maybe the safety is not in your own home, the WCA, you can call them. They have a 24-hour local hotline that it is manned. So take that if you need it. Rachel, I want to get back to what you mentioned in the earlier segment regarding antibody testing and where we are potentially with that. So we've heard a lot about this, which is like basically a blood test, but kind of give us some more information about that and where we potentially are with it.
Sure. So the tests for coronavirus that we've been seeing up until this point, where people go to a drive-in testing center and maybe a nurse comes out to their car, those are nasal swabs. And the test is searching for the virus itself, the virus's genetic material. The antibody tests are a little bit different. It's a blood test, so it might be a finger prick. And when the test is analyzed, it's searching for the antibodies that build up in response to the virus. So it's not actually trying to search for the virus itself. The reason why it's being talked a lot about is because it can identify people who have been infected and maybe people who have already recovered. And so if you're someone who, maybe you haven't been sick, but you want to know, have I had COVID-19? Or, if you have been sick, but you haven't been able to get a regular test, it might help inform you about whether you've already had the virus. And that could, help you figure out how to live your life going forward. But it's not quite that simple right now, because there's still a lot we don't know about the antibodies for this virus. Because there's a lot we don't know about the virus itself. So some of the things we don't quite yet know are what immunity to coronavirus looks like, how long immunity might last. If you build up antibodies right after having it, how long do those actually protect you until you could get this virus again? We also don't know if you could still transmit the virus to someone else when you have antibodies. So basically the bottom line is that antibody testing will be a tool for us. It will help us inform policy because it will teach us more about this virus and how it's spread in the community. It will teach us more than what we currently know right now. But we don't really know the utility of the tool yet. We don't know how we can use that information because there's still a lot we don't know.
So at this point, there's not antibody testing going on, definitely in Idaho, but has any of it happened, do we know, anywhere in the country yet? We've just heard so much about it.
Actually, there is antibody testing going on in Idaho. So I think it was the first test was approved last week by the Food and Drug Administration. The antibody tests that exist in Idaho that I know of, I know that they're being offered at one chain of urgent care clinics called Sterling Urgent Care, and they have clinics in Haley, Burley, and Idaho Falls. They had a limited number of those tests. I think at one point they might have run out at one of those clinics. But we're gonna see more clinics like that start to offer antibody testing. And then the Blaine County study that I mentioned before, that also involves antibody testing.
Yeah, Gemma.
Go ahead, Jimmy.
Sorry, I did see earlier this morning, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, he told CNN this morning, Friday morning, that antibody tests should be available within a week or so, that will be more widespread across the country.
And Jimmy, I'm curious about, and maybe Rachel, you know this, with that antibody testing, will it be, I mean, who will have access to being able to get tested? I mean, once again, will it be like you had to have had symptoms? I mean, you know, maybe you already had COVID-19. I mean, do we know, or will it be open to anyone who wants to know, you know, if they have antibodies to this?
Yeah. Go ahead, Rachel.
So I know at the clinics that were offering the antibody test this week, it was open to everyone, but there was a cost associated with it. So it was at least $100 up front, and then they would bill your insurance and, you know, figure out if your insurance would pay for it. So yeah, anyone who wanted it could get one if they were available.
Yeah, and I think that's the question, right, Gemma, that you alluded to was, is it going to be like the beginning of COVID-19 testing, where it's like, oh, okay, well, we have 800 to 1,000 kits, and we got to ration those, and I don't know the answer to that.
Right, that's what I'm curious about. And then, of course, Kevin, the State Board of Education, they met on Monday, which seems like 3 weeks ago, but it was 5 days ago. So they had some big decisions that they needed to make.
Right. So they made a decision about K-12 schools, but not a completely clear decision. What the board decided to do was to continue the closure of public schools, but they didn't come right out and say the public schools are going to be closed for the rest of the school year, as we've seen in other states, as we saw just across the border in Oregon on Wednesday. What the state board did here on Monday was to say that there's a possibility that schools could reopen this spring if several conditions are met. First of all, you would have to have a lifting of social distancing restrictions at the local level, the schools would have to meet whatever social distancing requirements are in place. The local health officials would have to sign off on the idea of a school reopening. And the state board is going to set its own guidelines about reopening a school. And we don't know what those guidelines are yet. The board is going to meet again on Monday, so we may have a better sense of what exactly the state board wants to see before it will contemplate allowing a school to reopen. The reaction from local school administrators has been pretty interesting and divided. I mean, you had the Blaine County School District come out the next morning and say, we're done for the year. We're going to do online. We're going to do remote learning for the rest of the year. Twin Falls basically said the same thing. Twin Falls has some of the higher case numbers in the state. The Boise School District on Thursday met and voted to close school for the rest of the year. On the other side of the equation, I heard from one school administrator in Madison County in Rexburg, who said, I want to see what the state board guidelines look like, but I'm kind of hoping that we might be able to reopen before the school year is out. So we don't really know how this is going to play out. And we don't know how schools would be able to reopen, how many would be even contemplate the idea of reopening, and how that works, and how that works with what we anticipate hearing from Governor Little sometime next week, is some sort of a continuation or modification of the stay home order. The governor has pretty much said something will have to be in place after April 15th. Right. So what the governor decides to do statewide, that may affect the process of opening or not opening schools.
Well, and Kevin, we should note too that when they, you know, places like the Boise School District, the Blaine County School District, as you said, these are what are called soft closures. So there is still school going on. It has just all been moved remotely, like we're all doing.
Buildings are off limits to kids. That's what we mean when we talk about a school closure right now.
Right. Okay. So then, Kevin, what about higher education? Because they've transitioned everything to online for the remainder of the year. We're quicker about that, frankly, than K-12 was.
Right. They jumped into going to the online model that second week of March when the coronavirus outbreak really started to take root in Idaho. But now what's happening on the campuses is a twofold challenge. We're starting to see what the cost is of the coronavirus outbreak for schools. And for colleges and universities, the costs are all over the place. It's the cost of sanitizing and deep cleaning buildings that are vacant as we speak. It's the cost of buying Zoom licenses or getting laptops in the hands of students and staff or setting up hotspots so students can continue their work in a parking lot. It's refunding students room and board when you've said, you know, guys, you can't come back to the campus. You got to finish the semester at home. You refund the room and board. So there's a cost to that. I mean, I talked to Cynthia Pemberton, the president of Lewis Clark State College. They're pinning about a $2 million cost right away from the coronavirus, from lost revenue and added expenses for a school with about a $37 million budget. So we're not talking about chump change here. That's a fairly significant bite out of the budget. But the bigger issue facing higher education is one that nobody can answer right now. When will schools reopen? When will campuses reopen like they used to be? And when you reopen, who's going to show up? You know, nobody can predict what that enrollment is going to look like come the fall of 2020. And that is a big revenue source, obviously, for the colleges and universities. Roughly speaking, they get about half of their money from the state. And roughly speaking, they get about half of their money from parents and students in the form of tuition and room and board. And nobody can predict what sort of enrollment they can see. Marlene Tromp was speaking to the state board earlier this week, that same meeting on Monday. And she said, you know, usually our folks at Boise State can analyze the enrollment projections and be pretty scientific about it. And let's face it, Boise State's numbers have been going up, up, up for the past few years. She is telling her budget folks, we've got to prepare for what could be a significant decline. We've got to prepare for anything. This is the fastest growing college in the higher education system, in the state's higher education system. And if they're talking about a decline in enrollment, that's a really telling sign of just how uncertain the future is for higher education in the state.
Well, and it was interesting, Kevin. I was literally talking with a Boise State University student just yesterday who said, you know, yes, he's going to come back in the fall, yet what will that look like? He said, we don't know if we'll all still be online. I mean, we don't know if they will reopen the campus like it was before. So it's those unknowns as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, think about it. I mean, are any of us making plans for August? I'm not. I don't know where I'm going to be in August. I'm not planning a vacation or anything like that. So how can you plan something as important as deciding to enroll in college or re-up and return to college when you don't know what that college is going to look like, when you don't know what that education model is going to look like? There is so much uncertainty, and higher education is right in the crosshairs of it.
So, Rachel, speaking of that, you know, the uncertainty and all of that, what are you've talked with some doctors. What are they saying about where we are right now and when we may get back? I don't like to say the word normal because I don't think it will be normal, but maybe when there is a semblance of normalcy that we get back to.
Right, definitely. So, you know, as we've heard a lot this week about, you know, whether Idaho is flattening the curve, from doctors in the state, I have heard that they're saying there are signs that social distancing is working and that the curve is beginning to flatten. Some of the things that they look at, you know, in the beginning, Kevin talked about the doubling rate. The doctors in the hospital setting, they look at how many people are coming into the hospital needing care, how many people are needing ICU care. And based on the total case numbers and those indicators, you know, they have some sense that the curve might be flattening. But what they also say is that it's a little too early to tell just where we are and just how much the curve is flattening. We need to wait. And actually, a doctor in Ketchum, an emergency doctor named Dr. Terry O'Connor, he spoke at a town hall on Wednesday and said he'd like to see a steady decline in those numbers all around for a couple weeks. And that's a little bit longer than we've heard some government officials talking about. But the reason why he's saying a couple weeks is because there's a time period of uncertainty with this virus. Some people don't know they have it right away, and people don't always go to the hospital right when they're infected. So, mm-hmm. you know, we have to wait a little longer is what they're saying.
Go ahead, Jimmy.
I was just going to say, in building on what Rachel was saying and what those doctors were saying, is just before we got on here, it's 12:34 on Friday afternoon, the New York Times got projections from the federal government that say lifting any kind of like 30-day stay-in-place order right now could actually lead to a spike in the summer in the number of ventilators needed that's higher than if none of these orders were ever in place. It is a worst-case scenario projection and doesn't factor in states sharing ventilators, but it does seem to back up what these doctors are saying that we're talking to Rachel.
Kevin and Jimmy, I know both of you have been looking towards next week because our governor mandated stay home order is set to expire Wednesday, April 15th. But we know that it's likely to be extended in part, Kevin, because Governor Little said that it may be extended.
He has made no bones about that, that there's going to have to be something in place next week. He said repeatedly that we're still seeing community spread. We're seeing it in a really all across the state. We are seeing some flattening of the curve, as he puts it. We are seeing some encouraging signs with the numbers, but he is concerned that if you roll back the restrictions too quickly, you're just going to be back in the situation later down the road. You'll have a second wave of cases, and he wants to avoid that. But at the same time, and I'm sure Jimmy can talk about this a little bit more, there is starting to develop, he's starting to get some pushback about these orders. And it's not just, there's very confrontational pushback. There are the Ammon Bundys of the world and the Heather Scotts of the world who are challenging the very premise of any kind of a stay-at-home order. But even in a more nuanced and very subtle way, very different way, and I want to emphasize how nuanced it is, when the state board is talking about reopening public schools, they're doing it partly because, some of the board members are seeing the numbers, seeing the case numbers slowing down. They're seeing what might be the beginning of a flattening of the curve. Emma Atchley, a board member from Ashton, talked this week about how you've got a lot of counties in the state that don't have any confirmed cases of coronavirus or very few cases of coronavirus. And she's right, that's what the numbers do say. But does that necessarily give you an accurate picture of what's going on the ground? And does that justify reopening schools? Are you looking too quickly into these numbers and trying to read too much into them? So it's gonna be very interesting from a public health standpoint, but also a political standpoint, to see how exactly the governor plays this next week and what kind of needle does he try to thread with this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like Kevin was saying, we've seen ever since he put this in place, a few weeks ago, we've had pushback from sitting state lawmakers. Kevin mentioned Representative Heather Scott. You had Representative Tim Remington, who's also a pastor in Coeur d'Alene, held church service, a week or two ago. The church's board of directors eventually did say that they would switch to solely online services, and he said he was disappointed with that. But then this week, I guess it was yesterday, we had Adams County Prosecutor Christopher Boyd said that he would not enforce this order because he thinks it's unconstitutional. The Attorney General Lawrence Wasdin already says that it's constitutional and is willing to defend that in court. So we're kind of waiting to see if there's going to be some kind of standoff in the courtroom over this. We don't know. And will this pushback really be enough for Governor Brad Little to maybe roll back some of these provisions, maybe give it back to local control like he was doing in the beginning, saying, individual school districts should make up their own decisions, local governments, cities, towns, counties should kind of make up their own minds. And it's unclear of what we're going to hear right now. We do know that Governor Brad Little is going to release some kind of op-ed about Easter church services at some point today. I haven't seen it yet, so we don't know if maybe that might be where he starts to relax. Who knows? but he said he will provide some guidance there. And that's just kind of what we're watching. And it's certainly going to be interesting to see what he chooses to do next week.
Because he really hasn't said anything, has he, Jimmy, regarding the backlash that he's getting, frankly, from his own party, really, in this mandated stay home order?
No, and when he's asked about it, you know, either directly or about how these things are going to be enforced, we don't really get good answers for that. I mean, in the order itself, it says that, you know, local police units, sheriffs, and state police can all enforce these. We saw earlier this week that, you know, Boise, they're just kicking it back up to the State Department of Health and Welfare. So it's unclear whether or not anything's even ever been enforced or will ever be enforced under this order.
And then, Kevin, you mentioned this briefly, but getting back to where we are with schools. So looking forward to next week, the State Board of Education will be meeting again, as you mentioned. And this is what? To potentially put guidelines in place to reopen schools before the end of the school year?
Yeah, exactly. We're expecting the board to come up with the guidelines that they would want to see a school meet in order to reopen, on top of the other sideboards they put around the idea that, you know, the health officials locally have to sign off and there has to be compliance with either social distancing guidelines that are in place or a lifting of social distancing guidelines. So we'll get a better sense of what the state board wants to see in addition to those other restrictions. So we'll get a better sense of what sort of framework they want to put around this. Mm-hmm. But we'll see.
What's interesting to me about this too, Kevin, is that for most school districts in the state, I believe we're only about 6 to 7 weeks out from the end of the school year. And I'm wondering, even if they were to open certain schools, if people would actually send their kids back at this point.
Absenteeism would be a really interesting thing to watch because, you know, parents may decide that they just think it's safer and more prudent to keep their kids at home. But it may not even get to that point because I think some school districts that have really had to make a dramatic change in education delivery and are rolling that out even as we speak. I mean, West 8 has not really even fully launched its remote learning model. They'll do that next week. Do you do all of that and then turn around and try to reopen schools a couple of weeks later for the final couple of weeks of the year? That I don't know if that is something that school districts are going to be in a big hurry to do. Do you just keep schools closed and maybe you figure out a way to do some sort of remote graduation ceremony or something like that? But if your biggest concern is to honor your high school graduates, and I understand that that's a big consideration, maybe that's where you're going. As Boise is trying to figure out.
Right, but I do know. But I do know, Kevin, I know in West Ada, at least one of the, I believe it's a middle school, kids were let in 10 kids at a time just this week to clear out their lockers. Mm-hmm. So why would you go through all of that, go to online learning, and then reopen?
That sounds like a pretty good sign that those kids aren't going to be back in school anytime soon.
Yeah. So before we go, two other quick things. Jimmy, Hialdi, it is supposed to happen every 5 years in July in Boise, and it's been postponed.
Yeah, to be honest, I had thought it was already postponed just because of the flood of announcements that we got about these big events closing, right?
Right.
But we learned about that this week. This is an event that draws tens of thousands of people to Boise, including from the Basque Country in northern Spain and southern here.
Did we just lose Jimmy there, or is it just me? Okay, Jimmy just faded away. So, since we're going to try to get him back very quickly, Harrison, let's finish up because I think we all would appreciate this. Local breweries, how are they staying open? Probably because we need them to.
That's certainly how more than a few people are kind of getting through all of this. But you know, in accordance with social isolation policies, a lot of, and this is craft beer month, as a matter of fact. But we're seeing so much in the way of like minimal contact distribution of beers. We're seeing so much in the way of delivery. We put together this business story in which we talk to people who are who are producing and selling beer, they're just doing it in kind of innovative ways to find some way around the health crisis side of things.
Mm-hmm. I do think it's really interesting how they've been able to do this, and hopefully it will make a difference for their financially for these all of these small businesses. Bottom, we do get back to some sense of normalcy. Hey, I want to thank all of you for joining us today. Love the Friday Reporter Roundtable and getting us up to date, because there's so much information. And we should clarify, this is live at noon. So if you listen back at 8 p.m., some of the information could have changed. I want to thank James Dawson with Boise State Public Radio News, Harrison Berry with the Boise Weekly, Rachel Cohen with Boise State Public Radio News, and Kevin Richard with Idaho Ed News. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much.
Peace out, Gemma. Stick to texting.
Peace out. I'm going to. You're listening to Idaho Matters.